You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thank you.
And you're at altitude today.
Yes, I'm broadcasting from Flagstaff, Arizona, which is up around 7,000 feet and home of the very famous Lowell Observatory, among other things, and also the site of an extinct volcano, Mount Humphrey, in this area. So a lot of interesting stuff up here in the high altitude northern Arizona mountains.
What's going on with the stock markets now? They seem to have stopped shooting between Iran and Israel.
Well, they've been moving up ever since the crash low of April 7th, which was the Liberation Day period where Donald Trump announced that tariffs were in effect. And as a result of that mini crash, we formed what's known technically as a V, as in victory bottom on the charts. And we've come back up, and the S&P and the total stock market index are just inches away from new record highs. The Dow, the Russell 2000, the mid-cap, aren't quite there. NASDAQ just about there. So I say NASDAQ into new highs, I'm sorry. So market has forgotten about those negatives. We do have this July 8th, 9th period coming up where the, concerned about the tariff deadline that, Trump initiated regarding the tariffs is coming up. So as I think we've spoken off air, Carolyn Leavitt, the press secretary, said, don't worry about it. That's a flexible date, which I wasn't aware of. The Fed chairman, I think, was going to be speaking this week. I don't know if he did or not, but the pressure is on him to lower rates. And Trump came out with a story, I think it was today, how he's already got four other names in mind to replace Jay Powell as Fed chairman. Of course, he's in a dispute with him because, but for good reason. I mean, I don't want to use, negative terminology, but the guy really was not competent. I mean, considering all the mistakes that occurred in the last decade or so with interest rates and the way they were managed and so forth. Though I have to give him some credit that the money supply has not been contracted, it's actually been slowly expanding, which is a positive. So despite the fact that rates haven't come down, the money supply, M2, is still okay. If that gets pulled in, then we're going to have more serious problems. So there's a mid-July meeting coming up for the Fed. And a couple of Fed governors, have sort of hinted that there's some reason that maybe we could lower rates in July. Some would say, well, if that happens, Trump has exerted pressure on Powell and he was successful, so we don't know if that'll happen or not. Apparently, Powell was politically motivated. If you recall back before the election here in the U.S., the month before, he lowered rates a couple times. And there's no question in my mind that was a politically motivated event because he hasn't done anything since, and there really was no evidence at that time to lower the rates the way he did. I think it was a half a point and a quarter point. So, I sort of lost respect for him anyway, despite I didn't have much respect to begin with, considering the conduct of the Fed up to this point. There's more and more question about the validity of the Federal Reserve. I mean, I've been questioning it for decades. I mean, ever since it was recreated in 1913, it's been a disaster. Value of the U.S. dollar has declined 95 or so percent. And you and I have talked off air many times about, all the mistakes and recessions and problems that were caused by the Fed. And the Fed, in fact, actually raised interest rates during the Great Depression. Ben Bernanke, the former Fed chairman, back in 2008-09, actually came out and said, yes, we caused it. It's our fault. Referring to what the Fed did back during the Depression in the 1930s. So, I mean, it's really an incompetent institution run by economists, which are the worst possible people in terms of forecasting markets for the economy. History has proven that out. So that's a whole other discussion. The day will come when the Fed will be abolished. I don't know if it's in my lifetime or not, but the free market should really determine, you know, interest rates and policy. And if a new Fed chairman gets in, which will happen probably next summer unless Powell resigns or he gets fired before then, you know, there's going to be a tie-in, at least temporarily, with gold and the bond market here in the U.S. to try to create some stability in our debt financing, which has gone awry. And, you know, even Bernanke talked about this back in 2008 or 9 when he was asked the question, are you printing money? I think it was a CBS News interview. And he said, yes, in effect, we are printing money. They had a little button on a computer, you know, generated device, and, you know, money is just printed, created out of thin air. You know, in some way you can argue, why do you need income taxes if they can just print money and create money the way they do? So it's such a fraudulent, incompetent system that it's really, I'm surprised we've lasted this long, honestly, Jim. You know, the way you really study the history of what's going on, the debt's crazy. You know, Trump's arguing that, you know, look at the interest cost on the debt. If you just lowered rates, Powell, that would help reduce our budgetary issue and covering the debt just on the interest on the current debt as it is. So despite all this, you know, the markets have recovered. The stock market has recovered. The last few days, you actually see the more important market, the bond market, rallying a little bit, which means long rates may be downticking a little bit. Maybe they're anticipating the Fed doing something. But usually it's a tail wagging the dog. You know, the 30-year bond is really the biggest, the bond market is really the biggest market in the world. It's bigger than the stock market. So, if the bond market things are getting in order and it starts rallying, that brings down long rates, which brings down mortgage rates and maybe influences the Fed to do something right for a change. So a lot of interesting stuff going out there. You know, of course, the war situation is supposedly behind us. I'm skeptical. You know, I don't trust the Iranians as far as you can throw a stick. I mean, you know, they would try to create some type of secret, you know, development somewhere or do something. They're just a criminal country, not the people, but the leaders. I mean, they're just out, you know, they're just the leading rogue state on the planet. And like I say, I don't trust them. Jimmy Carter messed everything up back in the 1970s when he didn't support the Shah of Iran at the time and keep the country stable, and so you just have about idiot nutcases running that country, and they're just not, you can't trust them. I just don't trust them, you know. So I know some Iranians personally that moved out of, you know, Persia, Iran, you know, way back in the 1970s, and many in Los Angeles, and they're very successful businessmen and real estate people. So there's good people, no question about it. It's just that these religious nutcases that run the country and their desire to destroy Israel and even bring down the U.S. and other, you know, countries is not something which is really tolerable. You know, you can try to make deals with the devil, but, you know, can you trust the devil? And that's really the problem there. But so far, everybody believes that it's okay. So we'll see if they get inspections and so forth, and we'll see if this negative situation is under control. So we're running into the U.S. 4th of July weekend and Canada Day in Canada, you know, not this week, coming up the week after from now. And a lot of traders will be taking some time off. So it should be interesting how it unfolds. You would think that the powers that be would want the markets to remain strong into the national holiday here. So trying to give the upside the benefit of the doubt, and that's sort of a capital summary.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, is there much progress on an official U.S. cryptocurrency?
Yes, well, the part of the Genius Act was approved this past week or so. I think it was passed in the Senate, but House of Representatives still has to pass it. So the question is, what is the Genius Act? Okay, so it's known as the Guiding and Establishing National Innovation for U.S. Stable Coins Act. So it's really a piece of legislation aimed at creating a federal agency framework for stable coins. Okay, so establish rules for issuers, require them to back their stable coins with safe assets, publish financial disclosures, and comply with anti-money laundering rules. And, you know, stable coins, you know, some of the big U.S. retailers, like I think it was Walmart that came out the other day, they want to create a stable coin as a means of transacting business. So that would avoid the credit cards, the banks. It would be a whole different system, reducing costs for both purchasers and sellers. And a lot of, you know, companies may embrace this. So stable coin is not a Bitcoin. It's actually, you know, a coin, it's generically a crypto, but it's another method of transacting business that's sort of outside the current system and more efficient. So the House of Representatives has to approve it, you know, it's just a way of transacting. Business in a more logical, efficient manner, you know. So this is really, I guess, one of the reasons why cryptos even came into being and why Bitcoin has been so successful for now, because it's sort of outside the system. You know, you could be in the middle of nowhere in Africa, Starlink or on your phone anywhere, and you can transact business on a Bitcoin, for example, and I guess ultimately as one of these stable coins, and you don't need a bank, you know, per se, you know, or an account. You can do it all on an exchange, a crypto exchange of some sort, and there's going to be all kinds of methods set up to do this. So faster, more efficient, more, you know, cost-saving procedure. So, you know, one of the companies that just went public this past couple of weeks called Circle provides some of the technology for the stable coins. I think it went public at, I'm trying to think now what the offering price was, but it opened at $69 a share, ticker symbol CRCL. In 2 days, 3 days, it rallied up to almost $300 a share, and now it's trading around $220, $230. More of these type companies in the stable coin crypto business are going to be going public, and you can follow. You know, you can't invest in these unless you invest in them privately, but there are some firms that offer you the opportunity to buy inside shares in hopefully near term IPOs, and so there are vehicles out there that have bought private shares in some of these hope to be public companies, and you have to research that, we don't mention the names of those companies in our newsletter at vrtrader.com, but, you know, you can certainly search for them. So a lot more coming in the in this area. So, you know, the whole game plan, which is, a year or more process, is get all this legislation under our belt here and really kick the crypto business into gear, and it's really exciting time. So it's just not Bitcoin, you know, it's all these ancillary things that are created, the current stable coins, and also the act that Donald Trump wants to invoke, you know, getting a Bitcoin reserve program set up, and another reserve program for other cryptos. Many of these the government already owns and controls through confiscation, through the criminal activity and seizures and so forth. So apparently the U.S. government also already controls tons of these coins and these cryptos, and they just want to consolidate it into a formal formal grouping, and it does nothing but help support the future for this. So anyway, real interesting times. We have our blockchain letter, which we offer at VRTrader.com, and would encourage those who are not in to take a look at this, because as I stated before, you know, and others share this view, and others that I respect in the industry, that some of the bigger percentage gains ahead are going to be in the crypto area. You know, not to say you can't make money in the stock market, but, you know, some of these things like this Circle stable coin company that just went public, I mean, you know, it's up 300-400% in a matter of days. Whether that'll hold and be steady is to be seen. But, you know, you can love Microsoft, you can love NVIDIA, you can love IBM, you can love all kinds of great companies, but you're not going to see, at least this time, those type of gains. So you might want to take a look into those areas and, you know, consider a portion of your portfolio going into those.
What's going on with gold?
It's sort of hit a little resistance here. It's been the same story for now the last several weeks. And if you look at the chart, it sort of has like a little declining tops formation in it. And if you recall, you know, much of the gold strength is related to geopolitical. The big takeoff started, you know, when Hamas invaded Israel and so forth, and Ukraine got invaded by Russia and so forth. So these geopolitical, now we've got the Iranian situation hopefully behind us, though I'm always nervous, as I mentioned earlier, about Iran. But, you know, the pressure is off a little bit, at least short term. Now, there are other reasons going gold, but the main reason has been, that's really kicked it into gear, has been the geopolitical. Silver has been doing a little bit better. That was showing a little bit more relative strength recently, and that's more of a speculative asset. But, you know, wouldn't be surprised if it makes it into the $40 or $50 an ounce level. You know, a lot of speculators in there, and there's a breakout on the charts, a lot of people playing it technically. So I'm not bearish on gold. It's just that it lost a little bit of its momentum here with the better geopolitical news. So we'll see how it all plays out. I mean, if you asked me the same question 10 years ago, I'd have said the same thing. You know, it's a long-term hold. It's volatile. It's probably going to go to 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, or 10,000 over time. And I would have said that in 2011 or 2012 if we had the same interview. And sure enough, if you waited enough years, it happened. But there are other ways to make money, too. So if you feel like you got to be a little careful, because a lot of people say, well, if things really go to hell, you got to have gold coins, and that really protects you. But it really doesn't, because, you know, you can't walk into a grocery store with a gold coin and expect to do a transaction unless you've got a very small denomination and the people on the other side of the transaction really want to do business with you or trust that coin is a valid form of currency. You know what I mean? And you try to cross borders with a bunch of gold coins in your pocket, they can get confiscated. You know, if you take it out of the U.S. or into Canada or back and forth. So you wonder, you know, what the use of it is. You know, I guess it's a hedge long term, unless the government tries to confiscate it again, as it tried to do back in the 1930s. So it's you know, sort of a false protection in a way. It's good that it goes up in value in terms of dollars, but when you think about its practical use, or if things really go to hell and you got to leave the country or you want to escape somewhere, can you really take it with you and use it and so forth? So it's just an interesting dilemma that we didn't have to worry about, at least at this moment. But historically, people say, well, you know, maybe you should have diamonds instead. You put your diamonds in your pocket, no one's going to take those, versus your gold in terms of government agencies and so forth. So you know, I like it. You can trade it, it's nice to have it. They're pretty, coins are pretty, and the only practical value of it is that if it goes up in price, you can convert it back to dollars or other currency, in which, or I guess into crypto at some point, and you can use it as a medium of exchange. So coins are nice to look at, and I have a couple sitting on my desk here. They're pretty and very good, numismatic, you know, numismatic value and so forth. So if you ask me a question about gold, you know, it's part of your portfolio. Treat it as you need, as you feel best suits your personal needs.
What's happening on the crude oil front?
Well, it really took a hit, Jim. You know, it ran up thinking that the Straits of Hormuz was going to be closed down, which wasn't going to happen. Because if that happened, oil couldn't come out and head toward China, which is who is an ally or friend of Iran. So if they closed down the Straits, China would suffer. So there's no way they're going to close it. And even if Iran tried to close it, you'd have just every European nation, including the U.S., bombing the Houthis or Iranians, whoever's trying to sabotage ships crossing through that strait. So as a result, crude oil came back down again. Everybody thought it was going to go to $100, $150 a barrel because of the war. So that's out the door. You know, I've been more of a bear on crude oil for months. You know, ever since Trump came in, you know, I thought it was basically the drill, baby, drill. And we could see crude oil in the mid-50s or even the mid-40s. We got to the mid-50s. And then I did get out of our short positions in our newsletter because I was saying, gee, there could be a geopolitical event here. We get a little bit of a spike, which did happen, and it's probably a short again. So unless something really blows up again geopolitically, I don't see crude oil taking off. So we'll just have to watch the news. But at the moment, I think the North America here in the U.S. and Canada, all the oil production, the leases are being cleared through expeditiously now. There's going to be a lot of energy around. So there's no reason for the prices to really take off unless there's another geopolitical event.
Now, speaking of geos, anything happening on the geocosmic front?
Well, I'm always checking that. In fact, I was at the Lowell Observatory yesterday here in Flagstaff, and I was just asking about what's going on. Actually had some views of the sun showing the solar spots that are crossing the sun's surface right now. And if you learn more about solar activity, as these solar spots cross the sun, particularly the big ones, and if they face the Earth, that's when you get these solar flares. They call them CMEs. Right now, you know, there's a supposedly a stream of solar wind buffeting the Earth's magnetic field today, and it's creating a geomagnetic storm. So you may only see it in the form of auroras in the northern hemisphere. You may not see more than that, but there is something going on right now, and you got some spots in the front of the sun. So sort of fun stuff. I got to actually look at them yesterday at the Lowell Observatory, which listeners may not know is one of the leading science centers on the planet. It's up here at 7,000 feet. It's where the planet Pluto was discovered in 1930s, and a little bit of a commercial for them, but it's, I think Newsweek magazine came out, said it's a leading science center in the U.S. right now. They have a whole new facility there, which is fantastic. I walked into it a few months ago when they first opened it. I thought I was going into an exhibit at Epcot Center at Disney World. It's just a spectacular facility, so you might want to check out the Lowell Observatory, where a lot of these questions are answered on a daily basis. The terrific science center. But to answer your question, yes, some activity going on right now, and doesn't seem to be of super significance, but there's always something to watch out for. So, and right here, by the way, in northern Arizona, we discussed this off air a little bit. Mount Humphrey is up to 12,000 feet, just a few miles north of me. This is actually the location of an extinct volcano, which blew its top about 100,000 years ago. But we've seen some inactive volcanoes come back. So part of me says one day there's a whole bunch of volcanic cones and there's a volcanic fields all around this part of northern Arizona. So this is an area in the future where, you know, we know there's about 45 active volcanoes on the planet right now, and there's one right within eye distance of your office, from what you tell me. So there's always that risk. Some of these babies get a little bit more volatile and create problems for all of us. But at the moment, they seem to be non-super volcano status, so we'll keep our fingers crossed, and hopefully they remain that way. But anyway, that's what's going on in the geocosmic right now.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thanks for having me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.